Accession number 28650, Mr. Gordon Mellor, Real 20. Now, we're talking about this rather strange business of this tourist trip
yes.
you took with Robert Isle or
yes.
Ale.
He wanted me to see it.
Now, you had just gone on to the
Champs-Élysées. Well, we needn't extend this sort of tour much further because it was there that we heard the music. And a German band and a column of troops came up and marched past. I can't say we stood on the side of the pavement and watched them. I don't think that would have been the thing to do. In any case, we just carried on walking and took notice of them as we went past. They were going up towards the Arc de Triomphe, so it didn't require us to take much notice of them. There were a lot of traffic about. There was pedal bicycles where they had a sort of a seat behind, or they towed a seat where people could sit in place of motorised taxis. And there was other apparatus such as cars running on gas of some form with bags on the roof, the same as they attempted to do over here on occasions. Anyhow, the walk continued back over the Seine and down to back to the Rue de Babylon. We did have other short walks around, and we also, on a couple of occasions, two afternoons, we went round the corner from Babylon into Rue Oudinot and upstairs in another block of flats. To see a lady called Elizabeth, and she had staying with her another evader stroke escaper by the name of Croft. He was a pilot officer of the Royal Canadian Air Force, and he was staying with her. So we spent the afternoon with him and her, and when I say we, it was we because Michael Joyce that joined us on those occasions. My little excursions with Robert were just the two of us. We'd play cards, listen to the radio on occasions, and yes, we had something to eat, tea time, and if there was a knock on her door, then she shooed us off into the bedroom, all three of us, pretty smartish. And when it was all right, we were called back out again. She was playing a double game. She had a boyfriend, if you like, of quite a high-ranking German officer. And she found out quite a lot of stuff by conversation he let slip, and she passed it on to the suitable sources. So it was a dangerous game to play, I feel, trying to be with us and work for the Comet. Anyhow, she was trusted entirely, and she succeeded, and eventually I think she went to the States at the end of the war. How much else was known about her, I don't know. I haven't been able to trace her at all. We saw Dady's father on another occasion, but that again was a short visit. Eventually we were told that we were going to be on our way, we were all set up, and I was taken down to the station, Mike was taken to the station, and Kropf was taken, and we joined forces there. There was another one, but the three of us, Kropf, Joyce and myself, one of the strange men-looking men that we'd seen on Lille platform. He turned out to be Russian. That was Alexis, and he and his partner had escaped from a camp not all that far from Berlin, and they got through to Belgium. They'd been picked up and were being passed down the Comet line. So we had just the one with us. The other one was going to come down a bit later, so they weren't together anymore. And we had the tickets were already booked, and we passed down the platform to a carriage on the train, and there was Daddy De Jong, there was B. Johnson, Daddy De Jong there, and there was B. Johnson, and as I understood him to be, and the four of us, and we were filled the carriage, six in all.
Now,
this was a night trip.
This is still October, still?
Still in October. I can't say how many nights we stayed with Eilis or whoever Mike stayed with. It could have been three, it could have been four. But we certainly were on the train. We were speeding through the countryside as we never had before. This was a fast train. The previous ones had been sort of, a bit more than local, but not quite so fast. And compared with my walking speed through the countryside down to Liège, then that was minuscule by comparison distance. So we spent the night. He had an occasional inspector or somebody to examine passes and permits and what have you, and it was daylight before anything much else happened. I think I'm not sure where we changed. Was it
Bayonne?
Yes, that would be it. Yes, we changed at Bayonne, out of the sort of international train. I imagine it was going on to Spain or somewhere like that, which of course they still do. And we got on a local train. Difficult to say how many coaches there were. Four or five, perhaps a bit more. It was quite a substantial train. It was full of people. We had to push our way on to get into the train, just to stand in the corridor. And we set off. There was the odd check and ticket inspector to come through. And must have taken him the whole of the journey to get from one train to the other, because he had to squeeze past the people in the corridor, let alone all the people who were in the compartments. It was quite a nice, warm, sunny day. We were getting warmer all the time, and I appreciated that. I don't think anything significant happened other than the usual sort of checks on the train. We pulled into Saint-Jean-de-Luz. We had stopped elsewhere, possibly Anglais, I'm not sure, or was it Biarritz? No, I think possibly Anglais. Anyhow, we got off the train, and we'd been primed beforehand as to what to do, so we didn't walk together. There was we had to sort of go out, not separately but together, but with one of the guides. And I walked with B. Johnson, and Dady took somebody else, and there were other people there, local people, who had appraisal of the situation. And some went out through the cafe. Some went out through the main booking hall, and I think got a feeling somebody else went round. There was another way out, but there certainly is now. At that time, we tried not to look at a party. And to that extent, then Mike and the others each went off by different routes. And B. Johnson and I walked down towards the harbour, and we sat in on a seat. Amongst, there was a paved area laid out with seats, and there were some trees there. And I've got visions of the water in front of us on the quayside. And after about half an hour's chat, then we went off, and we were shortly we went up some stairs to a flat above the ground floor premises, and I found everybody else was there, and the owner of the flat was Spanish, fairly youngish sort of man, and his wife, and they were to put us up for as long as we were in Saint-Jean-de-Luz. The helpers all disappeared, leaving the four of us in the sitting room trying to get to know Alexis. He hadn't got any English, and but he got a bit of Polish. Mike had some Polish as well, having been, as he said, in a Polish camp, or a camp in Poland. So they managed to converse a bit. And of course he didn't get called Alexis, he got called Joe after Joseph Stalin. And we stayed there. The actual period that we stayed is somewhat doubtful, a couple of nights perhaps at the most. And again, we were warned that we were going to be on our way. We didn't leave the flat. I have ideas about where the flat is, but I cannot to this day, and I look often enough to where the flat could be, but I cannot recognise the building. I haven't got a very strong recollection of the outside of it at all, but merely of the surroundings. So that is still to be sorted out. Anyhow, one afternoon we were prepared to move, and two young ladies turned up. One of them was Janine de Grief. She was the daughter of Elvira de Grief, known as Tante Go, who was the chief in the Southwest Branch area. There was the active chief up there, and everything that happened was under her control. Except, of course, she and Dady were great friends. Anyhow, Janine was there with another...
Janine,
J-A-N-I-N-E. If she now lives in Brussels. I've seen her just recently.
Now, what were these people like? Especially Elvira de Grief.
Elvira was a mystery to us. I didn't see her. I've seen photographs of her. I've got photographs of her, and she was. I've met her since, of course. But yes, she was
at that
stage, bundle of energy. Put it like that.
Now, what about Janine? What was
Janine?
She, like?
She well, yes, she was a nice-looking girl. She's not particularly tall. Her looks are entirely different these days, of course. The other girl, I don't know who it was, couldn't say, but Janine had a brother as well, and of course he was old enough to be in the know as well what was going on. But we went down, and we set off with a group of fellas and young women, and ambled through down past the quayside onto the bridge at Saint-Jean-de-Luz. The railway station is quite close to the river, which runs in at that point, and there is a fair-sized harbour, and it's a holiday resort these days. And the road bridge and the railway bridge go across the river side by side. So we went across the bridge there, and leaving the harbour area, we went straight on up the road, which is now, of course, a main road. It was fairly substantial to start with until we got to the outskirts of Saint-Jean-de-Luz on that side of the river. There is a considerable part of the town on the other side of the mouth. There's a bay with a glorious beach, and there's a cemetery and other accommodation there. This place is now called Cibor. So it more or less is opposite Saint-Jean. But we went out through the main road there, and eventually we came into the countryside. And one of the girls had got a bike, and so we swapped it around now and again to have a ride on the bike. We eventually went up what was quite it was still a made-up road. It was largely hardcore gravel and what have you, country road. We came to a farm, and it was here that we went into the farm. There was a hard standing off the road, and there was buildings there, and there was a house. And the two girls took us, she parked the bike, and we followed the two girls into the house. And there was an open sort of corridor, and on the right hand side, we became aware, was the cow buyer. The cows had been brought in at that time, and you could hear them there. And the domestic quarters were on the left hand side of this short corridor, and there was a domestic room beyond, and they took us into the sitting room, and we were greeted by the lady of the house, who was who ran the farm. The husband had been taken by the Germans, and I think he'd been deported. And I think she'd had a notification that he was no longer alive by then. I'm not completely sure about this, but she had two children. Again, I think it was a boy and a girl. And we stayed there for the rest of the afternoon, had a drink, and we had something to eat. And eventually, Daddy de Jong turned up, and shortly after, a man, a Basque, Florentino, he was to be our guide through coming walk through the western end of the Pyrenees. And I got a feeling B. Johnson was there as well. My memory's a bit vague on that. It may say something in the book there, but I can't be sure.
Doesn't say no.
It doesn't say no.
Oh yes, it does. It B. does. Johnson.
Oh, he was there as well. Right. So it got dark, and we were being given espadrilles. Those are the sort of rope-soled, can't call them slippers, you can't call them shoes. They've got a canvas uppers anyhow, which we changed our leather shoes and boots for, and they gave us a good grip on the ground. And also, didn't matter if they got wet or anything like that, we'd still have a decent pair of shoes So we carried those. We came out of the farm.
Did they give you anything else? Because it talks about a haversack and a stout stick here.
Oh, well, we picked up the sticks in a minute. Yes, it was probably a haversack as well. We had to put shoes and any spare clothing and stuff in there. But I think we were basically wearing the suit still. Oh, yes, I'm trying to think of the name of the lady who ran the farm.
Doesn't say, I don't think.
Oh, it's a name to remember. She's so well known. I'll come back to it.
Oh, Francia
de Zang. Yes, de Zang. The name's very difficult to pronounce.
It's USANDIZANGA, according to this.
Zendu Hadzaga or something like that, I think it is. Anyhow, yes. Silly for me to forget that, but I should have mentioned it earlier.
All right.
Yes.
So what happens next?
We crossed the road and along it a bit and then left it. Florentino sort of dived into a bush and he produced some stout sticks which we were each to use. These were being cut from a hedge and left there for the purpose of us to use them again on this trip. Having sort of been equipped with that, he then sorted us into the order in which we were to follow in single file, Indian file if you like, and he was up in front and the Dady was and B. Johnson were in the middle. As a matter of fact, Dady was last but one, and I was the last one. I followed Dady on, and we set off. It was dark. There was semblance of a moon still coming up, and we went on uphill, downhill, uphill, downhill, and this was the practice. It seemed to be a question of going up a series of rises, coming to a crest, going down a bit, but not so much as we'd gone up, and then going up the next one, which was with the ever increasing height as we continued. And we got up quite high so that you could see across the border, down to the coast, and you could see Ongai and where further through to San Sebastian. You could see lights there in the distance, and we were walking away from them largely. Every now and again, we would stop. Something had perhaps disturbed Florentino. He sort of halted us and be quiet. And on other occasions, we encountered the odd flock of sheep, and they, of course, scampered off, which didn't really matter much, except for the fact they'd all got bells on. So that as soon as we encountered them, then there was this tingling of bells where the flock sort of went away from us, which rather would give away our position to anybody who was out on patrol there. So we approached that rather carefully. How long we walked, I don't know. 10 or 12 miles, I suppose. And we then came to a high point, and we looked down quite a steep hill and realised that we were looking down a valley, because you could just catch a glint of a river down right in the bottom. And there was trees and bushes and a variety of undergrowth all to be negotiated on the way down. So we did. We kept our grouping of single file, and went with Florentino. He knew every sort of footpath and step down. So although we slipped a bit, then it was hard on the legs, but fairly safe going. But, until we came right to the bottom and found ourselves in a, I suppose what you would call a water meadow or something like that. It was certainly a very flat piece of ground, not very wide, where possibly at some time or other the river had flowed and then restricted more. We went across this green area and down some bushes, and there was the bank down into the water. It was running fairly fast one way another.
Which river is this? Is this
The Bidasoa. And the river itself, of course, is the frontier. The other side of the river was Spain. So Florentino let himself in and the water, and we each followed suit, having sort of made sure that nothing that got wet that could be avoided. That's why we've got the haversacks and what have you. The water was quite deep. It was, yes, it was well above our knees when we got in. And Florentino went across halfway anyhow to see if it was okay as far as depth was concerned for any of us, and then sort of gave a wave, and we followed Indian file again across. And as you got further into the middle, then of course the rate of flow increased and the pressure on you came quite strong. The stick, the third leg, was most desirable because we were walking on large sort of pebbles and rock which moved under your feet, so you needed, when you were sort of taking a pace, you needed your stick as a support. This took us across some little time. It wasn't a quick walk across the river, but we made it up to the other bank, and immediately you had to go up through bushes through moderate, just a little space where we could sort of shake ourselves a bit dry and sort of gather ourselves together again. There was no interruption. Nobody sort of appeared, and it was just a straight walk through there. Fortunately, nobody slipped, because it could have been a disaster, as it had been, or as it was some time later. Having got across, we then had to go up through some bushes to the railway track, which ran along the south bank of the river at that side. And Florentino was not only carrying a haversack, but he got a great big tin box on his shoulders as well. He wasn't a big, enormous man, but he certainly in spirit, he was a giant of a man. Yes, we got up onto the railway track. There was the usual form of construction, and we crossed it, being careful not to make any noise. There was no sound of any train or anything, so that was safe enough. There was another steep bank to go up through bushes and trees, and we got a bit perturbed because with the amount he got on his shoulders, then Florentino was making quite a bit of noise. Anyhow, we got up to the road, and there down to the left, of course, was the what I think they called the customs house, but certainly the it was an official place for the local guards to occupy, and the road was patrolled regularly. We'd been warned that across the we had to cross the road, and across where we wanted to go up the hill on the far side was a big pit, not to fall down it, because that was a hazard to be avoided, so to look out for it. So Florentino went across, and then when we all went across, one by one, waiting for the other one to get through and get on. And Dady was stayed there to control the our passage across, and she was the last one to come over. We made it across the road, no signs of activity from the custom house, and went up the bank, and it was very steep going up.
So you're now actually in Spain.
So we were in Spain.